Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Hour 2 live in LA. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Greg Cosell, 5 minutes. NFL Films, 42 years. Betting football, fantasy football, want to get smarter on football, no better listen. So I was, Joey, one of the things that I feel that fans, I think some fans get this, I just think it's worse than fans realize. Not only is there a gap between like Patrick Mahomes and a bad quarterback.
Right.
The gap in ownership groups, the difference between Stan Kroenke, the Rams, and the Lions ownership group is the Grand Canyon. And the difference between Robert Kraft and the Bengals, the Brown family, is the Grand Canyon. So the only way to overcome that is like you get a superstar quarterback. I mean, that's literally it. You get a superstar quarterback, you get a Burrow, you get a, you know, you get one of these great quarterbacks, and they just burst through it. And I was talking yesterday to a couple of different general managers in the NFL. Folks, there are 5 or 6 teams in the NFL that they're just not going to win. They're just not going to win. You have no shot to win. You can figure out who they are. But there is just nonsense going on this time of the year. And I feel bad for the players. Like, some of these players are just trapped. They're just trapped.
Well, when you look at the organizations that have struggled consistently throughout the years.
Same ones over and over and over.
It's usually the same ones. And to your point, it's either a star that breaks through. But even then, maybe they break through, but it doesn't necessarily translate to Super Bowls. It just makes the team better. But generally, when you look at these organizations and they're constantly firing coaches and there's constant dysfunction,
yeah.
Like, it's pretty simple. If your family was constantly dysfunctional, and like you'd change different things and you moved houses, like maybe eventually you'd be like, hey, maybe we all need to just like sit down together and figure out what we're doing wrong. It's internal. Like, if you keep changing personnel and changing stars and changing players, it's inside the building.
Yeah, I mean, the Chicago Bears, who have never had a franchise quarterback since Johnny Lujack, to their credit, they just went and hired Bill Polian. So Polian's a Hall of Famer. He built the Bills. He built the Colts. So the McCaskey family, they just went and got Bill Polian and said, we want you to do all this interview stuff. So they went and got, not a shock, they went and got a Colts defensive coach, Matt Eberflus.
Right.
And they got a guy that's interviewed multiple times for a GM. Now, I'm not saying they're good or bad. Bill's really, really smart. But to their credit, they're like, they went and got a consultant because Polian had a relationship with the McCaskies. And so the Bears just almost just say, hey, Bill, can you kind of lead point on this?
Yeah.
And he has a history.
If you're continuously making the decisions and the decisions turned out bad, maybe just let somebody else give it a try.
Yeah. And Polian has a history of hiring good coaches,
right,
and hiring good coordinators. And so, you know, you cross your fingers with the Bears. I would prefer an offensive coach with Justin Fields. I would prefer that. But if it's a, you know, Sean McDermott's a good coach, he's winning. He's a defensive guy. And with that, let's bring in Greg Cosell, 42 years NFL Films. All right, so I always, you know, we both know, you were the first person to tell me a year before he was in the NFL, you said, there's going to be a kid out of Wyoming. You do this every year. Every year, Greg gives, a year before the draft, when the draft is over, will give me a pamphlet, and it's got the top quarterbacks, receivers, running back, a lot of skill people, and he gives it to me, and you have your grades done. It's fascinating, so I get a cheat sheet. And you were the first person that said, there's this kid, he's a little skinny, he's a little wild, it's Josh Allen. So his career, he's got a lot of spikes and jagged edges to him. But I got to tell you, in the last month, a lot of those jagged edges, if you take away that 50-mile-an-hour win game, something happened over the last 5 or 6 games. And Greg, a lot of those jagged edges, he's just giving you good games every quarter, it feels like to me.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that he's calmer in the pocket and the ball placement has not been an issue. That was always an issue with Josh Allen. It's a big issue coming out. It was a big issue in his first 2 years in the league. He started to get much better at it a year ago in 2020. And this year, for the most part, you don't see the scattershot element to his throws. I mean, in the two playoff games, he did not miss throws. And he's such a physical talent. He certainly can make any throw. And I think the other factor, too, is I think he sees things better now.
Yeah.
And that's something that's often overlooked. We talk about quarterbacks and their physical traits. But you have to see things. And you have to see things before the snap. You have to see things after the snap. Because so many defenses try to disguise and use late movement right when the ball snapped. You have to recognize all that. And then you have to immediately know what to eliminate that's not there and what to isolate, where to go with the football. And he's gotten better at that.
So Mahomes had, he's done this twice in his career. He's had a bumpy 6-7 week stretch. The mechanics get off. He has, it looks like to me, solved a lot of that. He's a very unique quarterback. We never talked arm angles a ton pre-Mahomes. No. Now it's all we talk about. So, you know, I think we talked about this last week. What do the tapes say against Buffalo?
Well, you're right. We never talked to arm angles when Matthew Stafford's been doing it for 10 years, but he wasn't in playoff games, so we didn't talk about it. But Mahomes changed and evolved over the course of this season. He went through that rough stretch, as you mentioned, Colin, where he had a lot of unnecessary movement. Now, he will always move. I don't think he's one of those quarterbacks that's just going to sit there all the time. He will move, but his movement has become more calculated and more controlled. And the other thing, he's playing with a much greater sense of timing and rhythm. He did not throw a ball this past week that went more than 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage. And that tells you an awful lot about how they want him to be a much more controlled player. They want him to hit the back foot and deliver the football. Even that touchdown to Hill that we just saw, you know, that came against two-man coverage. And that was a beautiful throw. That was a timing and rhythm throw. He's become much more of that kind of quarterback over the last half of the season, always with the ability to make those second reaction plays, which obviously showed up against Buffalo.
All right, what is Cincinnati going to have to do? I mean, they've already had a taste of the Chiefs and beat them late in the year. What's the Bengals defense going to have to do against Tyreek and Kelsey and an improved offensive line and all the weapons?
Yeah, well, I think when all's said and done, you still have to get pressure on Patrick Mahomes. Look, the Bills could not get him to the ground, but they did get pressure on him. And I think you've got to get pressure on him. Look, let's go back to the Super Bowl a year ago. Certainly, the Bucs' defensive line is better from a talent standpoint than the Bengals' defensive line. But the Bengals are very creative. They're innovative with their stunt concepts. They do a pretty good job with their pressure schemes. You've got to get pressure on Mahomes. Yes, can he make special plays outside of structure, even when you pressure him? He can. But you can't take the approach that, okay, we're not going to pressure him. We're just going to let him sit there. You can't take that approach. You have to try to make every quarterback play faster.
Yeah.
The idea is to impact the quarterback. And you must try to do that with Mahomes.
Burrow was he outplayed Mahomes. He was very effective against the Chiefs. I don't know if you can duplicate that, but go back to that. What did he do so effectively?
Yeah. Well, what they did a lot of, and Burrow does this against everybody, but it worked in week 17 against the Chiefs, is when he sees one-on-one outside the numbers, and one-on-one doesn't just have to be pure man. It could be his own concept, but outside the numbers, it becomes one-on-one, is he takes those shots. He is very confident. He's very aggressive in his mindset. And in that game, he had Chase on three balls outside the numbers, one-on-one, including a touchdown, all against Tarvarius Ward. Here you see one right now. This is the 18-yard touchdown. And then he also hit Higgins outside the numbers, one-on-one against Ward. So Steve Spagnuolo likes to play man coverage. I think you'll see a couple things in this game from the Chiefs, though. You might see them play a little more two-man, which is in their arsenal, where they have two deep safeties. Because the reality is, Colin, with one deep safety outside the numbers, that deep safety is not a factor on any throw.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Green Bay and the Niners. We said going into the weekend, you know, we're starting to get enough evidence now. Even at Lambeau as a favorite, I thought Aaron played a little safe. He's always had this personality trait. If you drop a ball, do you fumble? he can ghost you a little bit. You know, it was a lot of Davante Adams and a lot of Aaron Jones. I mean, what did the film say? Wait, you've been on Aaron for years. You were the first person to go out and say, you know, you said, I remember that you said this 5 years ago. You said a lot of times the play is there and he just won't take the layup. And you were on that. So I thought he looked safe. I didn't think he was nearly as daring as a Stafford or a Burrow, but there's a lot of context you could add here. What did the tape say?
Well, I thought he was a little unsettled, Colin. I thought that he was not as calm and comfortable as he normally is in the pocket. He was a little unsettled. The 49ers have a really good pass rush. They get bodies around the quarterback even when they don't sack the quarterback. And I thought that Aaron Rodgers was not a comfortable player. Beginning with the third series of the game, the 49ers started to do some things tactically in specific situations to bracket and double Davante Adams. And, of course, you don't do that on every play, but they did it selectively and in given situations. But this was just not a comfortable game for Aaron Rodgers. And even on that last throw we're just looking at right now, he missed Lazard wide open in the middle of the field, and Lazard would still be running. They probably would have won the game. But he decided to throw it deep when that throw was not there. So he just was not – he did not play an Aaron Rodgers game. He was unsettled, and he didn't see things as clearly as he almost always does.
All right, I want to talk Niners and Rams. And McVay's lost six straight to Shanahan, but I talked about it this week. I said I went back and looked at all six games. And McVay in the NFL has averaged about 27, 28 points a game as a Rams coach. He's averaged about 18 a game in the last six meetings with Shanahan. So to me, a lot of this isn't necessarily the brilliance of Shanahan, and McVay is being out-dueled. It comes down to the defensive personnel up front for the Niners gives the offensive line for the Rams some trouble. It blows some stuff up. That's what I see when I watch them play is there's, you know, as you always talk about, Stafford has to hurry it. Goff had to hurry it. The games, I feel like the Niners defensive front personnel is just problematic for the Rams offensive front. That's what my eyes tell me. What's the film say?
Well, it will be this year. It has been this year because that front for the Niners is really good. They play nine different guys who get meaningful snaps. Everybody knows about Bosa, but there's other players who've been really good. Arden Key's played really well. Samson Ebukam has played really well. They get really good snaps as well from Kevin Givens, from DJ Jones. So this is a really good group. They squeeze the pocket. So even when they don't sack the quarterback, they squeeze the pocket. They sacked Stafford five times in the Week 18 game, and he threw some good yards, but they make him uncomfortable. And there are times when Stafford, even though he's not immobile, Colin, where he gets stuck in the pocket.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting because that has been a strength of the Niners. The other factor, just quickly to mention, has been the 49ers run game.
Yes.
They have physically dominated the Rams front seven. And that has essentially rendered the Rams pass rush not a meaningful factor in these games.
Yeah, now that needs to be mentioned because we spend so much time talking about Garoppolo. But I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and they were admitting that if you get McVay and LaFleur privately, they will acknowledge that Shanahan schematically is the best of the three. Now, there's McVay's leadership and his personality and the IQ of LaFleur. They're all really sharp guys. But privately, McVay and LaFleur will go, schematically, Kyle's ahead of us. He you know, his dad was a legendary NFL coach. And sure. I don't think we talk about this enough, is the Niners, Shanahan is so good at the run game that you don't have to draft a running back first, second, third round like his dad. You can
like
just
his
say,
dad, yeah.
Yeah, we'll just get the running back later. Talk about this run game because it is really the difference in this series.
Well, it's the use of formations and motions are so critical and how they hurt your run support and how they win the numbers game at the point of attack because that's what it becomes. It becomes minimizing your run support where the run goes and then having the numbers advantage. They're so good at that with the use of formations and motions. And so, like I said, what happens for the most part is they control the game and they render their pass rush, which, you know, everybody's going to talk this week about Donald, Miller, Floyd, because obviously what they did last week against Tom Brady when he dropped back over 50 times. Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to drop back over 50 times unless the game is so strange in other ways. But that's not going to happen. The first time they met this year when the 49ers killed him, Garoppolo threw 19 balls. That's a Kyle Shanahan game. So they render the pass rush kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I just said that. Watch Aaron Donald have 3 sacks, Colin. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're talking tactically is the way the 49ers play.
All right, let's go to your big play of the week. It is – and I said this week. Monday after the game, I said one of the things I've liked watching the Rams as a consumer is the stadium's big. The Stafford move was big. Let's go get Von Miller. They've got a Laker feel. The Lakers with the late Jerry Buss. That they figured the stadium out. The Laker girls, the Forum, the lighting, Jack Nicholson. Like they were kind of ahead of the curve a little bit. Like they understood it was a television show. And the Rams are very much about understanding this is a distracted market. This is not Cincinnati. The Lakers, Dodgers. And they take some big swings. But boy, they land a lot of those swings. They hit those things. And that's – I just love the way Stafford – they were leaking, they're capsizing, they're kind of a mess, and they're like, nope, we got 40 seconds. We're going for the win. And I loved it, and that's your big play, is it not?
Yeah, we'll take a look at the 70-yard touchdown to Cooper Kupp, and we'll set a few things straight here on what the coverage was. So we can run that play now and see the touchdown to Cooper Kupp that, you're right, came late. So here it is. And obviously, he was wide open, but there was a reason for that. And one of the first things we're going to notice when we look at this play is we're going to notice that Matthew Stafford was with an empty set. Okay, and they're an empty more than any team in the NFL by a wide margin.
Yes.
And then you have Kupp and Jefferson both running vertical routes to the right side of the formation. The Bucs were in cover two. Now, remember, in cover two, the corner is not a deep defender. He's a flat player. Okay, so we're going to focus on Mike Edwards. And what you have to remember about Edwards is his responsibility as a half-field defender in cover two. He needs to line up 2 yards inside the numbers to be in position to defend Kupp's outside vertical. That's his job because the seam by Jefferson is matched and carried by the middle hole defender. That's the linebacker, Devin White. So that is not Edwards' responsibility. His job is to play the throw, not to react to the route. He reacted to the route, and he left his real responsibility because he's responsible for the outside vertical to Kupp. So Edwards did not play his responsibility properly. That left Kupp wide open. And by the way, the ball was underthrown.
Yeah.
But that's the responsibility of Edwards. He needed to stay 2 yards inside the numbers to react to the throw. You don't react to a route. You react to the throw.
So good. Greg Cosell. Great seeing you again, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You know, got a little smarter there. That's pretty interesting stuff. That would, you know, because they practice that over and over. That would drive me nuts as a coach. Because you know the coach is preaching that. You've got a part of the field. Don't react to the throw. Don't react to the... I remember talking to Eric Mangini once. It was great. He was a coach of Cleveland. And he had preached something all week. Is they like to start. They go deep early. They go deep early. Don't get sucked in on this. And we were having a beer one time. And he goes, first play of the game, they went and did it on us for a touchdown. And I'm like, I just spent 70 hours. Don't do that. First play, my safety does that. And, you know, it's instinct. Sometimes you just, in the moment, you forget a responsibility. You go left. You're supposed to go right. And there you go. And Stafford picked up on it. Good stuff.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday, the NFC Championship presented by Intuit TurboTax Live is on Fox with a clash between division rivals as Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers take on Matthew Stafford and the Rams for a trip to Super Bowl 56. It all kicks off at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Fox Bet Super 6 wants the nation to stack the cash again for the 49ers-Rams NFC Championship game on Fox. Last week, the jackpot reached over $325,000, and they want to make it even higher this week. Scan the QR code and enter the NFC Championship contest for your free chance to win and invite your friends to play, because the more people who enter, the bigger the jackpot gets.
By the way, I saw this story. This is concerning if you're a Laker fan, and I told you earlier today, The rating, it's one of the most remarkable TV ratings I've ever seen. Los Angeles TVs on a beautiful sunny day. Sunday was a gorgeous day in LA. A noon start time. It's not like it was prime time Saturday night. The Rams noon game in the fourth quarter did almost a 70% of TVs in Los Angeles. The more diverse a city is, the lower sports ratings you get. That's just the way the game is played. That is an unbelievable number. The Lakers would get half that. And the Lakers forever, it's been a Laker-Dodger town. Laker-Dodger-USC. The Rams have trampled the Lakers in terms of popularity in like 4 years. I mean, they really have. I see Laker ratings. They ain't good. And that's with LeBron. I saw the bubble ratings when we were all stuck at home. I mean, I saw those ratings. I mean, no, we couldn't go outside. They weren't close to that. That is just a... that's how big the NFL is. And by the way, this Lakers story, according to reports, Mark Stein, very reliable NBA guy, there are concerns inside the Lakers organization. They do, they don't want Westbrook, but trading him is a problem because it will be acknowledging that it was a horrible trade to let go of KCP, who's now averaging 11 a game, and Kyle Kuzma, who's averaging 15, 15 and a half a game. So even though, and this is, you know, an organization is in trouble when they start being paralyzed by optics. You know, this is like the Giants, Dave Gettleman. I'm going to stay with Daniel Jones because you reached at number six to get Daniel Jones. He clearly isn't the guy in 2020 in the NFL, and you're just going to stick with him. And the Giants are going to stick with him, although nobody looks at Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Kyler Murray, you know, Mahomes and things. Yeah, Daniel Jones can go toe-to-toe with that. But you reach, and instead of just acknowledging, we whiffed, you keep doubling down on a mistake. I thought Westbrook, because the Lakers were so old and AD can't stay healthy, I thought they needed 30 minutes a night of Westbrook and 20 points. Somebody had to score on this team. They had no scores if LeBron and AD got hurt. It's been worse than I thought. I didn't have a problem moving off Kuzma. LeBron didn't like playing with him. But I will say KCP and Caruso were good defenders, and LeBron really liked playing with Caruso. I never understood that move. He's in Chicago now. But that's it. Also, this is a cautionary tale, is that star athletes are star athletes. They're not personnel people. LeBron wanted this move. Vogel did not want this move. LeBron did, and now they're trapped. It doesn't work. Westbrook has a lot of friends in the league. They all love him, but sometimes working with friends is not the best idea. Sometimes you have friends, and you love them because they're great friends. They don't necessarily want him next to a cubicle. And I think Westbrook's that guy, is that Harden loved him, and LeBron loves him. A lot of players love him. But some friends you don't work well with. So... That's a very troubling sign, is the Lakers, instead of just acknowledging we whiffed, are now like, we don't want to make a move because it was a bad move. And if we move him, we're acknowledging it's a bad move. You see this all the time with GMs in the NFL. They draft a guy high and they're loyal to him and he can't play. That's why a new GM often moves off a quarterback very quickly. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Baker Mayfield will be focusing on his rehab this offseason, and he doesn't want to let social media get in the way of that. He posted on Instagram that he is getting off all social media for the foreseeable future because he wants to do what's best to focus on himself and his family.
Yeah.
And he admitted that it is time to get right. He called social media toxic in a post last weekend, and he also discussed getting death threats over the platforms during the regular season.
I don't disagree with this move, but I think it was all self-induced.
100%. Yeah. Social media is what you make of it.
Yeah.
If you want to get down and dirty with people, then people are going to come for you. They're going to come for you no matter what. But generally, there's different ways to handle it. Young people often, I'm sure they ask you this too, getting in the business. How do you deal with social media? How do you deal with how people are mean on social media? Now, I have no feelings, so it's easier for me. But yeah. Some people do, and I understand that.
Yeah.
And my advice is, whenever you get into a front-facing business, whether it's ours or being a NFL quarterback
politician.
Or being a movie star or politician or anything where you are front-facing, you have to decide very early, how are you going to deal with social media? Because it is a reality. It's a part of everyone's business at this point. No matter what kind of business you're in, you essentially have to have social media. So how do you want to deal with it? Because people are going to be mean on social media.
Yeah.
Whether you could be the nicest, bubbliest, people are going to have something mean to say to you because people are mean. Like, not all the time, but some people are. How are you going to deal with it? You can completely ignore it. I know very, very famous, very front-facing people who do not read anything you have to say on social media. You think they do, they don't. Yeah. They spend their day working and enjoying their lives and their millions and millions of dollars. They're not worried about what you have to say on social media.
Yeah.
Then there are people that fire back on social media, respond to lots of people, spend their time on there. That's how you can handle it too. But you have to decide what you're going to do and how much of your spirit can take it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to have a ton of sympathy for Aaron Rodgers or Baker Mayfield when you have a polarizing personality and don't like the pushback. Like Aaron, no athlete in America today. LeBron went after Trump. He got ripped. Aaron went after Biden. He got ripped. Doesn't matter who our sitting president is. Half the country likes him, half doesn't.
Correct.
So if you're going to go after the president, Rodgers did. If you're going to go after Fauci, if you're going to be disingenuous about the vaccine, if you're going to rip the Packer front office, because there's a lot of people in Wisconsin, they're loyal to the Packers, not the quarterback. If you're going to be ripping the media, well, some media people are going to come back and take wax at you when you lose again as a favorite at home off a bye.
Yes. Generally, what you put out is what you will get back.
Yes.
And again, you can be totally nice and you're still going to get mean people. It's not going to be as much, though. And to your point, Baker's telling people that they're making up stuff about him to feed their families. Okay, people are not going to be very nice to you when you struggle. Like, that's the exchange. So you can call social media toxic, but if you're throwing chum in the water with a bunch of sharks, that's what you're going to get. They're going to attack.
Yes.
So I think it's a good move for Baker, mostly because it's become very obvious that it affects him in a negative way.
Yes.
And if it affects you in a negative way, give it to a social media manager.
No,
Take some pictures while you're working out and let them post it. You don't have to respond and read everything that's written about you.
No, I talk to my kids this all the time. I'm like, don't let it manipulate you. If you have to, manipulate it. But it's a toilet.
It's not even that it's a toilet. It's a massively powerful tool if used correctly.
Right.
If used incorrectly, it can ruin your life. If used incorrectly, it can really affect your mental health. So just decide how you are affected by it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even mean that you can't give out your opinions. Just give them out and let the world argue about it.
So Baker tends to be, I got to get the last word in guy.
Correct.
And
you're
you
never going to get the last word on social media.
Yeah. So Baker, when he could control it, liked it. When he couldn't, he's like, I'm out.
Exactly.
So you're never going to get the last word on Twitter. And Baker likes to get the last word at every press conference. And it's like, it doesn't work that way.
It just doesn't. Just got to accept it. So Aaron Rodgers' future in Green Bay is up in the air. And Eli Manning spoke with ESPN and gave his opinion on the situation. He said, it was important for me to finish my career with the Giants. I would think it's important for Rodgers as well, just because of the legacy that he has, the history of Green Bay, being there as long as he has been. It's not always greener on the other side. You can go somewhere and it's not necessarily going to be better. It's probably going to be worse. Eli spent his entire 16-year career with the Giants. However, I will say, not a parallel situation. Eli went 12-24 in his last three seasons and ultimately ended up losing his starting job. He started in four games in his final season, and they went 4-12 in 2019. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers just had a bye and won the NFC. So it's completely plausible for Aaron to move on somewhere else and the grass technically be greener there.
Right.
Now, it's a risk, obviously, but I also don't think – I like that Eli spent his entire career with the Giants.
Yeah, I do too. I like Jeter, Yankees. I like that.
I liked that. But Aaron feels different. And if he wants to keep playing, which, of course, we don't know if Aaron wants to keep playing or not, I feel like the story in Green Bay has sort of been written. Now, he could stay there, of course, but to me, like, I've seen the movie – we're on like the seventh sequel at this point. Still good, still watchable. You know, Fast and Furious. I will watch it again. Okay, but I kind of know what happens.
Yeah,
right. I kind of know how it ends. So, if he does move on, we're in a different space now, societally, how we view careers. Like, no one's judging the situation or decision for Tom Brady to go to Tampa Bay in a negative way. He just won a Super Bowl.
Well, if you're Aaron Rodgers, and I think about this, there's an argument to be made, and I think it's a very common sense argument, that Green Bay has athletically, roster-wise, kind of peaked. Aaron's expensive. Devontae was inexpensive. Now you got to pay Devontae. So now you're going to have a lot, and they're already $44 million over the cap. The cap challenges with Green Bay are going to really limit their growth going forward. Really are. So they're this version of the Packers this year is probably the best version. They lost their Pro Bowl center last year to the Chargers. They're probably going to lose Devontae. I can see Aaron saying, listen, I got four good years left. Denver's got a lot of great young players, and they haven't paid them yet.
And they just lost their coordinator today.
Yeah, so the Denver thing is not hyperbolic. I really do believe if you're Aaron and you're like, listen, just from a cap perspective, I know the division's tougher, but they got a lot of young guys that haven't been paid, won't be for a couple years, and this GM in Denver and free agent market, Denver's always been a tasty free agent market.
Yeah, that
they got Peyton Manning.
Brutal to me, but yeah. I think the Colts is a much better landing spot for him. But according to Fox Bet, the Packers still have the best odds to keep Aaron Rodgers at -110. The Broncos are second favorites, +150. The Steelers +300, Niners +700, and the Colts at +1100. So, you know, all the teams that make sense are, you know, are there. I think he will end up going to Denver or Indy just because those are the places that make the most sense. Steelers is totally available, Aaron, you know. Pittsburgh will embrace you. So James Harden can pull it off this year.
Isn't he a free agent?
Yeah, well, he will be next year. So he didn't sign an extension in the preseason, so they pushed the decision to the upcoming summer. He intends to hit free agency, which he's never done in his career. And the Sixers have reportedly planned to pursue him this summer, but they haven't made the Nets a trade offer.
So why
the deadline is February 10th.
Why did the story get out that he was unhappy and because he wants it out?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, James is telling you, I'm
not
happy.
Start preparing your monies for free agency because I'm not going to stay here. I'm not dealing with the situation
year. There's just too much noise. KD's hurt. Harden's unhappy. Kyrie's a part-time player. You cannot win a champ. You're not getting through Milwaukee with this nonsense. It's just too much.
No, and he's reportedly frustrated with the Kyrie situation.
Well, of course he is.
I mean, KD was playing so many minutes because Kyrie wasn't available. Now what's happened? He's injured.
Folks, I know you do what you want with your vaccine. But if you are part of an athletic team and you will not get vaccinated and you're a star or a quarterback, I said before, Carson Wentz, Kirk Cousins, and Aaron Rodgers, I think it's irresponsible to your team not to be vaccinated. If you're a wide receiver, people clobbered Cole Beasley. Everybody carries 7 wide receivers. Yeah. Like it's not as punitive. It's not as punitive. Everybody's got 9 linebackers and 2 on the scout team. But Kyrie Irving, dude, Kevin Durant's out there as a veteran player with injuries, having to play 45 minutes in a playoff game. What do you think? You know,
like look, it's a selfish decision. Whether you agree that he should get vaccinated or shouldn't get vaccinated, at the end of the day, two things can be true. Multiple things can be true.
Yeah.
It's also a selfish decision. Like, it has affected his teammates. It's affected the team. And reportedly, it's not even because he doesn't believe in vaccines. It's just because he doesn't believe in mandates. Like, imagine if in order to come into this building, I had to be vaccinated and I wouldn't do it. Not because I don't believe in putting it in my body, but just because I'm protesting on behalf of other people. Like, you can't even hold a straight face. Guess what, guys? I'm not on the show after this contract. That's how that's going to work. Not because you don't like me, but, like, I have to be at work. You have to work. This is a commitment that we've made to work.
Now, again,
it is his job to play basketball.
Yeah, if you're in an environment where you're not part of a collective or a team and don't want to do it, then fine.
Sure, okay.
But I just could not look my teammates in the face if I was Matt Stafford or whoever, and I have a huge game and I'm not available. I could not sleep at night.
It's just this pending idea that everyone is just free to do whatever they want. And I've never been of that impression. Like, I've never gone through life like I can do whatever I want.
Well, I can't.
I don't know who told you guys this.
I'm married, so I can't officially.
I just don't get it. Like, it's like, oh, like a freedom. Oh, I can do, like, you can't do whatever you want. You can't just go take a car, right? Like, oh, there's a car in the street. I think I'll have that car.
I'm not even allowed to drive without insurance, so forget.
You have to go to a government facility, fill out paperwork, and receive a piece of documentation that says you are qualified to drive this vehicle.
And wear a seatbelt, and use your blinker, and go
and
a certain speed limit.
You got to take that car in to make sure there's not too much exhaust coming out. Like, it's just this idea.
Can't use my phone in my car either, even though I do, or I'll get a ticket.
Look, we could rant about this forever, the bottom line is, the Nets are probably not going to look the same next year.
Yep. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Oh, we got more new coaches to address here. More new coaches. I'll explain that coming up. Right now, 24 assorted roses, 1-800-Flowers.com, $39.99, or upgrade to 24 red roses, $10 more. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com, code HERD.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Mike Harmon, I'm Dan Byer, and we have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Joy, we have something to announce.
We do. We are announcing two new head coaches for the USFL. You ready?
I am ready.
All right. Are we doing the drum roll? The head coach of the New Orleans Breakers will be Larry Fedora.
He coached at North Carolina. In fact, he led them to an 11-1 season, which had been their best year in 15 years. Four straight bowl appearances while he was at North Carolina. He'd wear that visor. Very animated guy, Larry Fedora. A lot of coaching in his career, all college, and he is now former Tar Heel coach, the coach of the New Orleans Breakers.
All right, the head coach of the Michigan Panthers will be Jeff Fisher.
We know Jeff, 30 years, is a position coach, a coordinator, a head coach in the NFL. Former USC Trojan, played in the NFL for 5 years. He was a former Chicago Bear defensive back. All regular season games, by the way, all of them for this league, which starts in March, will be played in Birmingham, Alabama at Summit Legion Field. They have a new stadium there as well. And the first game is simulcast on NBC and Fox, which has not been done since Super Bowl I. Can you imagine that? The first Super Bowl, two networks at it. Now you pay billions of dollars for exclusive rights.
All right, well, let's recap the head coaches in the two divisions. So in the North Division, Jeff Fisher, the Michigan Panthers, Mike Riley of the New Jersey Generals, Bart Andrus of the Philadelphia Stars, and Kirby Wilson, the Pittsburgh Maulers.
Yep.
And then in the South, Skip Holtz, the Birmingham Stallions, Kevin Sumlin, Houston Gamblers, Larry Fedora, the New Orleans Breakers, and Todd Haley will be coaching the Tampa Bay Bandits.
I think most fans are know most of these coaches.
Yes.
So there you go. The USFL starts in March. Looking forward to it. I've told you before, I think spring football will work. Years and years ago, I tell the story that when I worked at ESPN, I went to the number two guy in command at ESPN. This was 20 years ago. And I said, not 20 years ago, it was about 17. And I said, you need to buy the UFC or you need to put it on the air. And they were very reluctant because it was a lot of old baseball guys and very refined journalists. And I said, everybody in LA and Vegas is talking about it. You're going to regret it if somebody else gets it. And now eventually it's all over their network. So, and I've tried to buy twice parts of the MLS, which is, by the way, exploded in valuations over the last 10 years. Now, I've been wrong the last two times on spring football, but I am a huge believer in spring football because with legalized gambling, the key has always been, is it well capitalized? That's been the problem.
Yes.
The Vince McMahon League would have worked, and then COVID happened. That's why they're playing all these games in Birmingham for the first year. They know they can get those. That's a red state. You're going to be able to play games. it's not going to be overwhelmingly restrictive if we get more variants. And I think it's going to work. I think it's going to be used as a gambling device. And Americans right now cannot get enough of football. The television ratings, just to show you what's happening in this country, and I don't talk a lot about this, but this is pretty staggering. The increase in NFL ratings as gambling is being legalized, the rollout of legalized gambling in America, there's a new state every couple weeks or every couple months. The increase in NFL ratings from last year to this year, the increase, not the rating, just the increase, is greater than the NBA Finals average last year. Okay, that shows you, and it's not like the games got all better. It shows you that sports gambling is jet fuel for our most popular sport. The ratings for hockey, as you gamble, if Canada embraces, and I don't really follow Canadian gambling and what the provinces allow, but what gambling does is soccer in Europe, hockey probably in Canada, though I'm not sure, football in America. It takes your most watched sport. It doesn't affect everybody equally, but it takes your most watched sport, and that usually is the sport people have the most passion for and knowledge of, and people go deep on it and gamble. And so just think about, that's where legalized gambling, if you want to know why leagues are into it and TV networks are into it, there you go.
Well, it's also, sports has become the last thing that people watch live on television other than politics. So if something's going on and everyone's talking about it on Twitter and you're seeing it all over social media.
By the way, everybody talks about cord cutting in cable. Fox Sports was basically flat last year. Like sports, if you have a lot of sports on your cable network, you're not going down nearly as fast. And in some areas, you're just plateauing. Like, but there's a reason I think this will work. It's fun and the gambling. Hour 3 next.